This is Sports 180, entering our final hour this afternoon, final hour of the weekend, the month as well. Sports Talk will take over coming up at 3 o'clock. And this summer we have, I guess we're heading into the summer, but we have really enjoyed over the last few weeks being able to bring Vol Network Classics each Saturday, classic Tennessee football games, Tennessee basketball games. And tomorrow we will rebroadcast the 2006 Tennessee win over Georgia, putting up 51 on the Bulldogs. Heather, those are good times for Tennessee fans.
Absolutely good times. And that was back in an era, you know, now hanging 50 on somebody, it still means something and it's still special. It's just not as much because of how prolific offenses are at this point in time. But back in 2006, it was a rare occasion that somebody was going to score 50 points. And the fact that Tennessee was able to do that on the Georgia Bulldogs, just outstanding. I mean, it's still hard to believe that that happened. And Will Shelton broke it down, you know, where it's like touchdown, 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 block punt. It's just fantastic to go back and relive that.
Yeah, somehow Tennessee was able to do it with old EA, quarterback number 10 there under center. Ayo. A good time for Tennessee's offense and a team, of course, that turned things around in 2006 after a disappointing 2005. So you can catch that tomorrow with the pregame after Saturday Sports Talk and the lead lap, and then the start of the game at 12:20 right here on the Sports Animal. And yesterday we had a chance to talk to a member of that football team, Jonathan Wade, who was on the defensive side. He had a big interception in the third quarter. Also admits, yeah, I missed on a tackle on a kickoff return by Georgia in the fourth quarter. But there's a lot that he remembers as well. Listen to this. Jonathan Wade talking about the 06 Georgia game. Then he talks a little bit later about the 04 Florida game as well, because he played a big role in that. Jonathan Wade yesterday first on that 2006 game against Georgia.
Let's go back to the night before where I had Popeyes. My brother brought me Popeyes. That was me, Jason Swain, Robert Meacham, I think one other guy all ate Popeyes, which probably was kind of like a no-no, but we did it anyway. The halftime speech, we were down, I think, 24-3. And we'd already lost to Florida by like 2 points. The halftime speech, I think, was done by our strength and conditioning coach at the time, Rod. He told us to just go get on the bus. It's actually what he told us. He said, go get on the bus. And it kind of just, he left it there. And that fired us up, and we came back out at the halftime knowing that if we lose this, it's over. We had just went through a bad season the year before, you know, and we didn't, there's no way we wanted that to happen again. We had to change something, so. I probably remember way too much about that game, to be honest.
I was going to ask you, what did it feel like being in Sanford Stadium at the end of that game, looking up at the scoreboard after that halftime speech? I mean, I could imagine the celebration in the visitors' locker room was nothing short of epic.
Truth moment, I had no idea what the score was when the game was over. I knew we won. It happened. We went from 3 to like 55. So, I mean, it went so fast. There was so much going on. Like, something major happened every series coming out of halftime. Even to the point where they returned a kick for a touchdown where I missed the tackle. And that's how they got end up with 30, that was their next touchdown that they scored. It just was back and forth, and we didn't have time for any errors. So, like, everything matters at that point. That's when it's time where you have to do exactly what your coaches tell you to do. A lot of people miss that, but the only way you have a chance to come back in a game like that is to actually be fundamentally sound.
We're talking to former Tennessee defensive back Jonathan Wade, spent several years in the NFL as well. And Jonathan, I want to go back a couple years earlier. We talked about the Tennessee-Georgia game 06. What do you remember about the 04 Florida game? Here's one thing I remember. Media day that week, you're coming down to talk to the media. You're coming down the stairs. You start doing a gator chomp, and Bud Ford tells you to cut it out. But at the end of that game, there's a play with you and Dallas Baker. Kind of works out in your favor, and then James Wohlhoit hits the kick. What do you remember about all of that?
Everything. Yeah, I got in a lot of trouble for that. You want another truth moment? My dad called me when he heard about that. And told me that was a huge mistake. I should not have done that. That they go come to me the entire game. But, you know, I'm just excited. It was my first start as a corner. Me coming, you know, only as a corner instead of going both ways. And Dallas, he's big. He was 6'3", 6'4". And I'm not 6'3", or 6'4". And, you know, as the games are playing on, if you go back to the game against Cal, I hit DeSean Jackson in the face on the second play of the game. Playing DB, you got to work mind games. You have to. You're at a disadvantage. The offense, the receiver, the quarterback, the coaches, the coaching staff upstairs in the skybox, everybody knows what's going on except you. So you got to be able to have some type of thing to where you can, you know, attack. So talking to him, frustrating. We were into it the entire game. And I took a chance. I took a chance, I kid you not, to shove him, see if he would react, and he did. We got lucky. That goes left. I probably never play again.
Jonathan Wade, he took a chance. Chance worked out for Tennessee, because if Dallas Baker doesn't have that penalty called on him, I don't think Tennessee wins the game against Florida in 04. And then the Georgia game, as we've talked about, you can hear the broadcast of that from 06 tomorrow afternoon. A lot of fun as well. So good memories there. Jonathan Wade remembered a lot of details from before and after those two games.
Well, and remember that viral social media challenge from a couple of months ago, the Popeye's chicken sandwich versus whoever else it was? I think we just got our proof that we needed, that the Popeye's chicken sandwich number one. If that group of players ended up consuming that pregame meal, bam, there's something in that Popeye's chicken, and it's not just all of those seasonings. So I thought it was cool. It was a great way to catch up with Jonathan Wade, and I really appreciate him doing the interview yesterday. And a memory that like no other. I mean, you heard it right there. He was able to instantly like recall so many different details, and you've gotten 14 years down the road. So it was cool that he was still able to share all of that with us. And if people missed it, they need to go back and listen to the whole interview at The Sports Animal, 991thesportsanimal.com, because everything is archived there. But just fantastic catching up with him yesterday.
Yeah, also some interesting thoughts on Jonathan on what the mindset of players need to be. As Heather asked Jonathan Wade yesterday when he was on the show, he played at a time where Tennessee was competing for SEC championships. How does Tennessee get the right kind of culture to do that, and what can Jeremy Pruitt do to help with that?
Well, the players make the plays. Coach's job is to put us in position, prepare us and put us in position to win, you know, be successful. So the players still have to go out there and want to perform at a high level every snap, every day. Until that happens, nothing will change. Until it's self-policed in the locker room, nothing will change. There's nothing a coach is going to do. It has to be internal.
Yeah, how does that happen? Where does that come from to where you get that internal policing and you have the right kind of leadership in place to hold others accountable?
Well, if you look at business, a lot of people play the role before they ever get hired. So I'm sure as a head coach of a university such as Tennessee, Knoxville, in order to get that job as a coach, you have to be able to manage these kids that you are trying to turn from 18 to 22. You know, we're wild. We come from nothing in some cases. You know, we're there because we have a scholarship, not because of grades or whatever the case is. So you got to be able to manage all that. But again, on the field, if it's not a decision that's made up in the locker room that we're going to go practice hard, that we're not going to take today off, that we're going to touch the line every time they ask us to touch the line, if we're going to get to the morning run, if you don't make that decision, it doesn't matter. Coach Pruitt, he can have the best speeches. He can be the best motivator in the world, but if it's not inside of the athletes, it's not going to happen. And I don't know, because I'm not there. It's got to be the guys inside the locker room. In the locker room, the players make it happen, period.
Catch people up to date with what you're up to now, Jonathan, and what you and your family are doing, especially during the quarantine, because it's such a weird year for everybody.
Absolutely. Well, I have some kids that I kind of mentor in a way. I'm trying to find a short way to say this. I want to give them what I didn't have. As a kid growing up, I wasn't the biggest kid. I wanted to see a professional athlete as a kid. Like, when I was a kid, I wanted to have a professional athlete tell me I was going to be okay. So I watch film with them. I help them train. They can call me on the phone. I'll take them to all-star games so that I can talk to them in a car. Whatever it is that they need, I'll do it. I mean, they don't know that, but I just know what it's like to, you know, long for that. To know that I didn't have anybody tell me that I was going to be okay. I didn't believe it until the defensive back coach, which is currently at Tennessee right now, ended up in my summer school class the year before my senior year, again, by God's doing. And we just talked, and like we met and talked, and it was everything I needed that summer to like get going. But I didn't have that before. I didn't have someone who was there, someone who reached the dream that I was trying to reach, tell me what I needed to do. Some of us kids, we'll listen. We're that desperate. And it's just people won't reach out. You know, they just won't go back and talk. A lot of people will, so I'm not saying that they won't. But, you know, some kids will listen. If you can reach one or two, one maybe, you never know what that kid could become, Inky Johnson.
Jonathan Wade yesterday during our Call of All segment. Don't forget the Tennessee-Georgia game, 2006. You can hear that Vol Network Classic tomorrow afternoon. Pregame at noon, then about 12:20 for the start of the game. Good stuff there, and you could tell the passion that Jonathan Wade had and said, hey, maybe the next Inky Johnson. We talked to Jonathan about that as well. Jonathan and Inky were teammates playing in the defensive backfield together. That 06 season actually is when Inky suffered the injury he did against Air Force. So check out the entire interview on our website, but enjoyed the time yesterday with Jonathan Wade.
Yeah, it was absolutely awesome. And the fact that he's taking on a role of being a mentor for other kids that just don't have a great direction in life, I thought that was really interesting that he used his personal experience of wanting that sort of person in his life to tell him what the next step should be, or this is how you should be working, and he just didn't have that, so he wants to in turn be that for other kids. I mean, just so cool, and it's really one of the my most favorite reasons for doing the Call of All segment, because some of these former athletes are just going on to have huge impactful things going on in their lives, and it's just awesome to catch up with them.
Yeah, some of those guys locally, some other in other places in the country, and it's great to see what they've been able to go on and do. And Jonathan actually was on his way to Knoxville. He mentioned during the conversation yesterday that he was coming back to Knoxville, so at least driving to Knoxville at the time. So appreciate the time he gave and some other VFLs gave the station this past week to get you ready for Tennessee-Georgia tomorrow. We'll come back, talk about getting ready for the 2020 college football season, catch you up on some of the news of the day as well, right here on Sports 180 with Heather Harrington. I'm Josh Ward on FM 99.1, the sports animal.
Com. Josh and Heather have a lot to say.
Whoa, big golf, son. All right. Well, see you later.
Let's get to it on Sports 180.
Back on Sports 180. Good Friday afternoon. Thanks for being with us. Hope everybody's getting ready for a big weekend. With Sports Talk taking over at 3 o'clock, Sam Foreman is producing for us today. He'll have a midday Sports Minute for you coming up in just a few minutes. I'm Josh Ward alongside Heather Harrington. And Heather, you know, a lot of the attention is on Major League Baseball. Are they going to get something worked out or not? And, you know, who the heck knows at this point? I remain hopeful and optimistic, but maybe I'm being blind and naive in that case as well. There's also the conversation of the NBA, and their situation is different in that they are trying to get the season restarted to close things out. And right now it seems like there's a good chance they just close out the regular season, go to the postseason, but the GMs reportedly are even split on that. Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN just reported 2 minutes ago that there was a two-hour Board of Governors call this afternoon with Adam Silver, the commissioner of the NBA. It included discussion and debate of the possible plans and financial implications of proposals. No broad ownership consensus has been found on an idea. Woj also notes that was probably always going to be the case. Are we being overly optimistic that the NBA is going to return? Because it's almost like there's an assumption that it's going to take place. Are you concerned at all that it might not work out?
No, I think because the majority is going to end up ruling. And what you have to remember in situations like this, you're never going to please everybody. So that should not ever be the goal. That's utopia that doesn't exist except in fairy tales. So you have to come up with the best solutions that please the majority. And when you look at what Kevin O'Connor reported, you know, after he was on one of those calls yesterday, the fact that the majority of these guys, they're ready. They don't have everything ironed out. I mean, they're still, you know, starching and going back over it with the iron, But the fact that the majority is very much moved, the players want to play, the Board of Governors want to get these guys back in action so that they can recoup some of the money that has already been lost this season. Everybody wants the season to happen for the most part, so that's why you're going to see a solution. It's not going to make everybody happy, though, and I think if you start getting stuck and bogged down in the weeds, you would tend to be a little more pessimistic towards it. But the bigger picture is everybody wants it to happen, so that's the main thing to cling on to it if you're trying to pin your hope somewhere.
Yeah, I think it's going to work out as well. I think it is. Here's one question I have. What is taking so long? Why are we looking at late July for them to return? The English Premier League's coming back June 17th.
Yeah, I think that that's odd. It seems just so far off, especially, I mean, we're about to start June, so you're talking about 2 months before, almost 2 months before
you... Yeah, 6 to 7 weeks, roughly.
Yeah, return to action. I don't know. I would expect to see that timeline move a little bit and maybe move up, because more and more teams are also opening up their facilities to welcome guys back and get them back working out, at least in team facilities. But maybe they're just trying to be safe, not sorry. Maybe that could be, you know, they're just trying to give it as much time as possible. But I think Adam Silver is going to have to start making some tough decisions and kind of putting his foot down. The only thing that Adam Silver that worries me about him is he does try to please as many people as he can. He's not like David Stern in the fact that he rules with an iron fist and what he says goes, or like a Roger Goodell in the NFL. He really is trying to listen to all parties, but at the end of the day, you're the commissioner. You've got to make the decision. So make it, rip the Band-Aid off, and let's start playing some basketball.
Before or after July 17th, before or after July 17th for real games that count in the NBA, I bring that date up for several reasons. One, it's a Friday heading into the weekend. It's the third Friday in July. Also, that's another month after the English Premier League will have restarted. So before or after July 17th, do you think we will see real NBA games?
I'm going to say before. I do think it might not be way before, you know, it might be that week before that Friday rolls around, but I think you're going to have to. I mean, you can't tell me that the EPL teams, that it's easier to get in shape for soccer than it is to get in shape for basketball. It's hard. It's hard to get in shape to run straight for 90 minutes. So I'm going to think that they're able to resume play more quickly than the July 17th that you just put out there.
Okay. When did the EPL announce? Was it 2 days ago?
Yes.
The 27th? So they gave themselves roughly 3 weeks from the announcement to the return of actual matches. So, you know, if the NBA can get something done maybe in the next couple of weeks, maybe they can be in a position where that would take place. Major League Baseball, I mean, time's ticking. We're talking about playing a full season for Major League Baseball. So, and of course, they could have things end at a later date than the NBA would hope to, but June's upon us here. Monday's June 1st. It's time to get some things worked out here.
Yeah, Major League Baseball, they need to start acting with a little more pep in their step, and I think they just need to both parties come to the agreement, like, whatever we do in 2020 has no bearing on the future. So don't come at us, like, if it's the players talking, don't come at us with this, you know, revenue sharing and this and that during the next collective bargaining agreement. Like, we are going to stand firm, and if you want to face a lockout, we'll look at that, you know, down the road. But you're right. Now, one thing about baseball, they don't have a problem, I guess, from their mindset of going up against football, because they do it every single year anyway. So if more of their season bled into football season, you know, they go the whole month of October before they crown a champion. I just don't feel like they care about that as much because they're already competing with football.
One more note from Woj, Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN. He wrote that Silver and the NBA Players Association will keep talking on details of a return-to-play proposal. Silver has spent a lot of time listening to factions of teams make their cases, but in the near future, he will have to ask owners to get behind a plan that he believes to make the best sense. I'll say it again, time's ticking. I think they're going to play.
Yeah.
Charles Barkley said TNT's boss says, hey, it's going to happen, but at some point, It's got to happen. We can't just sit here and say, yeah, they'll work it out.
I think by Monday or Tuesday. I honestly think you're going to see the plan. They're going to have an announcement by Monday or Tuesday.
Oh, you think so? That's a bold prediction. I like that.
Yeah, yeah. I just feel like it's right on the cusp. This is kind of like the third major meeting they've had with big-time parties, ironing out all the details. The players are more and more invested in this whole campus-like atmosphere where they're at the resort, their families are at the resort with them. They're going to get it worked out, and I think sooner rather than later.
Yeah, playing down in Disney, maybe dreams can come true, and we actually see some team sports someday before the year 2020 ends. We'll come back here on Sports 180 another half hour before Sports 180 ends. We'll get you to Sports Talk at 3 o'clock and get back to some Tennessee football talk. 9-3 this fall, that's part of the conversation we've had today right here on Sports 180 on FM 99.1, the Sports Animal.
Danger. Hey, this is VFL Joshua Dobbs, and we're counting it down. It's just
99 days until
it's football time in Tennessee.
This Sports Radio WNML countdown to kickoff is brought to you by Knoxville TVA Employees Credit Union. Find out more at tvacreditunion.com.
Go home!
This is Sports 180. Thank you for being with us as we have a half hour to go before Sports Talk will take over coming up at 3 o'clock with Heather Harrington. I'm Josh Ward. Sam Foreman producing for us, and part of our conversation today goes back to hour number one. We had Barrett Salee of CBSSports.com on the show. We do every Friday, and he has put out his predictions for what will happen in college football this year, including in the SEC. He has Tennessee going 9-3, so we've talked about Tennessee and the chance to go 9-3. If that's the case, Tennessee is going to get at least one really big win against Georgia, Florida, Alabama, or Oklahoma on the schedule. And the Power Poll, by the way, today, we're going to rank the five toughest games for Tennessee to play this upcoming season. So we'll go at least one spot outside that top four. Not at least one. Those four are going to be in it. Let's be real. But so we'll do that at the end of the hour. But you've been feeling a little more optimistic. You said, hey, I can buy in, Heather, to that 9-3 idea.
Yeah, and you know what? It's May 29th. So many different things can go different directions at this point in time. I think part of my reasoning is 8-4 is the easy answer. Challenge yourself. Think outside what everybody else is thinking. And I think it's the easy answer because it's the most likely outcome. So I do want to, I mean, there's a reason why everybody is pointing to 8-4, and rightfully so. But if you're thinking about looking at things from outside the box, which way can you lean more towards? And, you know, early on when the coronavirus hit, I was really nervous about, you know, Jarrett Garantano's growth getting stunted and him not making the progression that I thought he could make. But you start looking around at some other teams that are just rife with overhaul and changes. And you have to imagine that that is going to impact those teams more than some hands-on workouts with Jim Chaney and Jarrett Garantano. So I do still feel like I am more leaning towards the 9-3 option, Jeremy Pruitt solidifying, proving that, hey, this is the right path. Everybody get on board. I'm just feeling that more. I don't know if it's the recruiting that they've done over the past couple of months or if I'm just drinking the Kool-Aid today, but I do feel like there's evidence where you can kind of go ahead and predict a win over South Carolina, you know, a win over Missouri because of everything they're going through, a win over Arkansas. I mean, one of the toughest games I think you're going to have to face, and it's all about being focused, is the Kentucky game. And Will Shelton said it on our airwaves an hour and a half ago, He was like, so you're telling me if Tennessee's going to stub their toe, it's Kentucky coming to town, Kentucky winning in Neyland Stadium, something they haven't done since the 80s? And it's like, man, you kind of check that box in favor of the Vols whenever you look at it through that lens. And so, I'm leaning more towards the 9-3 being very attainable this year instead of just going kind of with the status quo 8-4.
Okay. Now, I will say, you know, that the recruiting over the last couple of months, none of those guys are going to be on the team this fall. Just making sure you know that one, right?
I know that the blonde hair doesn't go that deep into the root, especially during the coronavirus. I understand that. I was simply offering that up as a maybe. I got a little too excited based on what this staff had been doing over the past couple of months.
Look, statistically, or, you know, if you look at a probability standpoint with it, I mean, Tennessee has a really good shot to win one of those four games. I mean, the odds kind of say that, yeah, Tennessee's likely to get one of the four. Now, is it going to play out that way? Doesn't always, because the odds did not say Tennessee was going to lose to Georgia State, and they did. The odds did not say that Tennessee was going to win out when it had six games remaining, five, I guess, in the regular season, plus the bowl game that was going to come. The odds were not in favor of that happening, but it did work out. So just because I think Tennessee, like Tom Fornelli said, look, Tennessee's in a position to get one of the big four, and that's what you're saying. I think that's probably true. I guess I kind of lean toward Tennessee could still very much be in danger of losing one that it probably shouldn't in terms of the games that Tennessee will be favored to win. So I don't think it's out of the question that Tennessee beats one of Florida, Georgia, Alabama, and Oklahoma, but still loses to one of those teams that Tennessee is better than. I think it's actually a longer list, though, of games that will be kind of tougher than, like, Vanderbilt. I don't think that's in the cards for the Commodores. I know what had happened before last season.
Yep.
It's just if Tennessee loses to Vanderbilt, I don't think that's the only loss against a team that Tennessee should be better than this year. But, you know, Missouri, first-year coach, let's see. How much of an impact does that make? I don't know. Maybe Drinkwitz gets in there and they have a better outcome at the start of the year. But Kentucky, South Carolina, Missouri, I think, is where you're going to look at it. Arkansas is a team. You want to talk about things kind of working out in your favor. Getting to play Arkansas this year as your other West opponent.
Huge.
That's all right for the Vols. That's one. I know you have to go there. That shouldn't be a problem. The Vols should be thankful for Arkansas coming on the schedule this year.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And for how many years, though, did Tennessee just get the bad luck of the West opponent the year before was terrible, but the year that they came up on Tennessee's schedule, like that very next year, Ole Miss. You know, Ole Miss, one year they're great. Now, luckily, in Derek Dooley's first year, they were terrible, so you were able to kind of neutralize that one. But there were so many times where the SEC West opponent, not named Alabama, was bad the year before they were on Tennessee's schedule, and then was really good when they were on Tennessee's schedule. Or Tennessee was
just
really
cases.
Bad.
Yeah. Now, part of that was those teams taking advantage of Tennessee not being so good. Like the year that Tennessee played Arkansas in 2015, Arkansas was okay. I know it was viewed as a bad matchup. That wasn't a very good Arkansas team. Would they go 7-5?
I think so.
Well, that was 7-5 with a win against Tennessee. If you beat them, they're 6-6. So you're not wrong. I mean, part of it was just the SEC West was good. You know, it's a deep division. There weren't many bad teams during the 2000s in that division.
Yeah,
and playing Alabama was every year. That was the real tough break, if you ask me.
and then, you know, Georgia on this come up and they're in your same division. But yeah, I mean, I totally get what you're saying, and the fact that maybe my perception of those West teams just being really good is not entirely accurate because Tennessee was equally as bad.
Yeah, sure. And I mean, you're not wrong, though, in what you're saying. Like the Ole Miss game, which led to the Cousin Toby gift game. Go read David Zubin's story on Cousin Toby, which, you know, is a central moment for Tennessee in the 2010s. That was a tough one where you're taking on Hugh Freeze's team, which may have not been built exactly the right way.
But, man, they had some players. And only coach to beat Nick Saban twice, right, in the SEC? Hugh Freeze?
Is that right?
I think so. I'll double check.
Like currently? I mean,
Yeah, over the past 10 years. Isn't he the only coach to have multiple wins over Nick Saban?
Oh, maybe that's the case. Yeah, over the last 10 years.
Yeah. It's crazy. Yeah,
less at one point had it, right?
Yes. Yeah.
So,
before he went to Kansas.
Yeah, right. But yeah, it hasn't happened that often. So Tennessee 9-3. Are you on the record? You're kind of leaning that direction.
No, I'm
right
just
now?
Kind of feeling it. I mean, we got a couple of months to go. We can't just be showing our cards to everybody here on this, you know, Friday afternoon. I'm feeling that vibe. I'm feeling 9-3 is looking a lot better than it was 2 months ago.
Okay. So optimism.
Having made no progress on the field, by the way, with no tangible evidence to point to from spring practice. There you go.
Yeah, having not been on the field.
Yeah.
But I guess technically they haven't regressed on the field either. We will progress into the final segment of Sports 180. We'll move forward to get you the power poll to close things out. Five toughest games for Tennessee in 2020, and then hand things over to Sports Talk coming up at 3 o'clock. With Heather Harrington, I'm Josh Ward. You're listening to FM 99.1, the sports animal.
The king of beer, the king of sports. Live from the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting, this is Sports Radio WNML.
This is Sports 180. Thanks for being with us. With Heather Harrington, I'm Josh Ward. Final segment here before Sports Talk takes over at 3 o'clock. We figured out maybe what we were looking at with Nick Saban there a moment ago. So, coach, it's not a long list of coaches with multiple wins, but Hugh Freeze did it. Les Miles had done it technically during that offseason before Hugh was fired. He was the only active one. Maybe that's what it was at the time
that I read.
That you had been thinking of. Les had done it before Hugh, and then that following season, 2017, Gus Malzahn joined the list, and he's beaten Nick Saban twice since then, 2017, 2019, this past season, and then first in 2013. So Gus now has three wins head-to-head against Nick Saban.
Yeah, and this is just absolutely crazy. Brett McMurphy points this out in a tweet from about 6 months ago. Among active coaches, Gus Malzahn ties Les Miles for most victories versus Nick Saban. There's only 10 active college coaches that can boast on wins over Nick Saban. That's just unbelievable. Dabo Swinney also has two wins versus Saban. So Dabo, Hugh Freeze, Les Miles, Gus Malzahn all have multiple wins, Gus and Les having one more. And then Mack Brown, David Cutcliffe, Kirk Ferentz, Ed Orgeron, Kevin Sumlin, and Kyle Whittingham.
Will anybody be added to that list this year?
That's what Kirby Smart and Jeremy Pruitt are hoping.
Yeah, and Jimbo.
Yeah, and Jimbo, you're right. You're right. That's another one. So I don't know. It's hard to say. You would kind of lean towards Kirby having, I mean, you wouldn't kind of. You would definitely, that's the odds-on favorite because of the team that Kirby Smart has built. But I wouldn't count Jimbo, and like I've said today, I mean, and I had him number one in my power poll yesterday as most winnable or the one that I feel the best about out of the toughest opponents on the team. I'm not ready to count Jeremy Pruitt out of the Georgia game on May 29th. That's for sure.
The Texas A&M game is the week before the Auburn game for Alabama. Look ahead week. We'll see. So some coaches trying to change things. With our talk on the NBA a little bit earlier in the hour, of time is ticking. There was one other note from Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN covering the league. He said, as hard as owners and teams are pushing for proposals rooted in some level of self-interest, there is still a sense that they will give Adam Silver, the commissioner, the latitude to implement the plan that he lands on with the NBA Players Association, and most expect that it'll come inside the next week. So I'll say, Heather, I'll join forces with you. I'll say by Wednesday they get something figured out in terms of some kind of idea of when to return to play, what the format's going to be. Do they play the regular season? Do they just go straight to the postseason, and what that will look like as well? But by the middle of next week, maybe they'll get something done. Surely by this time next week, they will. If not, then I do think there are some real concerns that would pop up.
Yeah, I would be very concerned if by Friday you don't have a definite start date or a target date and a plan moving forward. I would be worried about what is the viability of them actually playing this summer. Those thoughts would creep into my mind. But I'm sort of convincing myself here. I just really think all parties are so motivated They have the resources, the place to get this done down in Orlando. Everybody unanimously pretty much wants to be back playing because they don't want to suffer the financial hardships that would come of just totally losing the season. So I think when you combine all those factors, they will come up with a plan that the majority can accept and move forward with. And I'm very optimistic about that happening early on next week. They have an announcement.
Let's hope so. Something else that's not been a real positive, it's what happens with minor leaguers in baseball. Most of the conversation, of course, is around the Major League Baseball level. Saw this story earlier today. Sam reminded me of it a few minutes ago. David Price, now with the Los Angeles Dodgers, former Red Sox most recently. He was a part of that Mookie Betts trade. He hasn't even competed yet for the Los Angeles Dodgers, but he's already decided he is going to pay $1,000 for the month of June to all of the minor league players in the Dodgers organization. So it's going to impact more than 200 people who are facing not getting any kind of compensation. So David Price is offering up some of his own money to minor leaguers within the Los Angeles Dodgers organization.
Yeah, that's just absolutely incredible. And he hasn't even played for the Dodgers yet, correct?
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, the fact that he's already making that kind of a commitment to the farm league system, that's just incredible. And you've heard stories about David Price and some of the things that he's done in different communities, whether it was when he was at Vanderbilt or up in the New England area. I mean, you know, I think he's a really good guy. And we might have labeled him as somebody we didn't like early on because of the teams that he played for. But just what a move of generosity by him to his new team.
Yeah, it doesn't mean he's perfect. Doesn't mean he hasn't made some mistakes. I mean, I know he had some run-ins, 2 years ago or so with the media. But he ended up helping Boston win a World Series. And should they have given him that contract? I would say no. That doesn't mean that's the case. But also doesn't mean that he's all bad. I would say the opposite of that. So good on David Price doing something he doesn't necessarily have to do, helping an organization that he's yet to pitch for. And for people in minor league organizations working there, playing in them, it's a really scary time right now. Most of the attention is around Major League Baseball, but let's not forget the impact on minor league baseball as well. Getting ready for Sports Talk coming up at 3 o'clock. Let's hit today's Power Poll.
Captain, we're losing power on the warp engine.
Nuclear power pants.
What's up? I'm Kenny Powers.
You don't know the power of the dark side.
I have the power!
With great power comes great responsibility.
Full power, Mr. Scott.
The Power Pole, driven by Ted Russell Ford. Two locations to serve you, Kingston Pike and Parkside Drive.
Joining us for the Power Poll and getting ready for Sports Talk at 3 o'clock is John Wilkerson. John, good afternoon. How are you?
Doing well. How are you?
Hey, we're doing really well. Getting ready for the weekend. Hard to believe we are heading into the month of June when the weekend comes to a close. And today we've been talking about Tennessee trying to go at least 9-3, which would be the first time Tennessee's done that in a regular season in 13 years. Also on the hard to believe list. John, would you like to lead us off on today's Power Poll as we give out the five toughest games for Tennessee on its schedule this upcoming season?
Why, sure. At number five, I'll go with what was number five on the most winnable games for Tennessee, and that's at South Carolina. At number four, I go at Oklahoma. Number three, Florida. Number two, at Georgia. And number one, Alabama.
Crimson Tide. Tennessee hasn't beaten Alabama since 2006. Vols really would love to end that streak. Heather Harrington, your top five toughest games for Tennessee in 2020.
All right, I'm going to go with the number five spot, and this is because of where it falls on the schedule, and they're going to be highly motivated. I'm going to go with the Kentucky Wildcats. I know that sounds crazy, but definitely have to watch out for them and not look ahead a week, for all intents and purposes. Number four,
I don't think that's crazy at all, by the way. That's not going to be a gimme game for Tennessee against Kentucky.
Yeah. Number four on my list, I'm going to go with the Oklahoma Sooners. I still don't think that's an extremely winnable game for Tennessee, but that's because I do think that Tennessee could beat Georgia, but Georgia's a much better team, I think, than Oklahoma. So I have Georgia at the number three spot. I have Florida at number two, and Alabama, the kings of college football, still at number one.
with the Boogeymen. Those are your top two there.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just scared. You can play those games at Halloween every year because they give me that same freaky feeling.
Yeah, I do understand. I have South Carolina at number five, like John. If not South Carolina, would have gone Kentucky. But South Carolina on the road. Don't be overconfident just because you rolled up some points on them in the second half this past season. I have Florida at number four, which feels way too low, but it is at home. You go to Oklahoma. That's also when your first test. Can you really put up enough points against Oklahoma, which will have a new quarterback in Spencer Rattler? Let's see. So I have Florida at four, Oklahoma at number three. I have Alabama at number two. It is at home. It's favorable for the schedule with Tennessee and not favorable for Alabama, which will be playing its eighth straight game when the Tide come to Knoxville. I have Georgia on the road. If it were earlier in the season, I don't think Georgia would be number one. But being in November, I have Georgia as the toughest game for Tennessee in 2020, a defense that should just be loaded this upcoming year. Bama's going to have some talent as well, though, from what I hear, when it comes to Knoxville. That's the Power Poll. Five toughest games for Tennessee heading into the 2020 college football season. John Wilkerson, what's coming up next as we head into Sports Talk in just a few minutes?
Well, Sports Talk today is brought to you by Oak Ridge Nissan, and I'm out here on the Oak Ridge Turnpike where it meets up with Illinois Avenue. It's their month-end closeout, so plenty to talk about with their back-to-business sale, and we are loaded up once again. Jesse Smithy of 5starpreps.com, he'll be along at 3:35. We'll talk Major League Baseball with Indians video coordinator Mike Barnett. That'll be at 4:05. David Cobb of CBSSports.com will talk college with us around 4:35. We'll check in with Tennessee, former Tennessee assistant, now administrator, Steve Caldwell. That'll be at 5:05. Andy Landers, the former Georgia women's basketball coach, now analyst, he will join us at 5:35. And we look forward to being joined by Steve Hamer for Hamer Time at 6:35. So we have all that, our trivia challenge, and more today on Sports Talk from Oak Ridge Nissan.
Good stuff. John, we appreciate the time. Look forward to the show here in just a few minutes.
Sure do appreciate it. Hope you guys enjoy the end of May.
Absolutely. Thank you, John. Thanks, Sam Foreman, back at the studio. Great job today, as always. Heather, great job by you. Thanks. I'll miss you next week. Next week is my next furlough week, so I will see you June 8th. Will people be more excited about Tennessee football players being back on campus or me on Sports 180? Tough debate, right?
We'll put up a Twitter poll. We'll find out
sure.
for you.
Yeah. Please don't tag me on that. I don't want to see the results. It'll be very upsetting. Have a great week next week, Heather, and I'll see you a week from Monday.
All right. Sounds good. Enjoy the fam, and we will definitely miss you.
Everyone have a safe weekend. Thank you for being with us. Don't forget Saturday Sports Talk, the lead lap, and Tennessee-Georgia 2006 tomorrow here on the Sports Animal. Sports Talk is coming up next.